The following is a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.
Every now and then we get really lucky as a guest. We have a great guest with us today. He's been a friend of mine for a long time. When you hear me use the term smartest guy in the room, this is one of the smartest guys in the room. And a person I really enjoy talking to and who makes a lot of sense. He can take very complicated economic principles and bring them down to a level in which you and I can understand. By the way, if you've got a question for Rodney while we're on, just go to straighttalkmoney.com, send it to Peggy, and we'll be glad to bring it up on the show. But we've got with us today Mr. Rodney Johnson. Rodney worked closely with Harry Dent. They used to have different titles. I was just talking to Rodney before we went on and said, you know, there's a title. There really isn't a title now. And so Rodney works closely with Harry Dent on how they spend their money through predictional stages of life. He is a true expert. You hear me talk all the time on this show about demographics, and this is an area in which Rodney and Harry are true experts. Good morning, Rodney.
Morning, Mike.
Thank you for being with us today. All right, we were kind of talking during the break a little bit about the Brexit, and I said this morning that I read a piece where 51% of the people want to remain. 51% of the Brits that they polled so far want to remain. What would happen if they didn't? I don't think most of us understand the ramifications of Britain leaving the Eurozone.
Well, there's the Eurozone gives you the ability, and it's not the Euro as much as it is the pure European community. But it's the free movement of capital and people, and so capital being either money or goods. And so immediately you put up the border blocks, and so you have to start checking passports as you move from France over to England. You have to put in not tariffs necessarily, but you have to mark down the goods that go back and forth. And anybody who traveled to Europe 20 years ago remembers going to every border and having to change money and having to stop and have everything checked. It was just a royal pain. Well, for people, that was one thing. Moving big trucks and rails of goods was something different. It was just a nightmare. And so some of that would come back, but the Great Britain would then have to negotiate a treaty back to the European Union. And so it's a lot of paperwork and craziness. People aren't really sure what would happen. But from the other side, what would happen to Europe if it lost Great Britain? They lose London. And there is no question that there are two financial capitals on the planet. One of them is New York. The other one is London. And so if they lose London, they lose this bright star of financial light that is really the only one. Most people can't even tell you where the financial capital is for Germany or France, much less, you know, Portugal or Spain. And so they all know London. And so each one of them has something to give up. The question is, what do they gain? The European Union doesn't gain anything if they lose Britain. But Britain gains some freedom from a lot of regulations that the European puts on them on how they produce goods and services, how they do trade. And that's what this is about. The Britons are saying, we're living with all of these tethers, all of these regulations, and we're not getting enough in return. And so I think the European Union has more to lose than Britain, but it would be a lot of turmoil as we go through the transition.
Now, do you have an opinion on whether or not they're going to stay or not? It looks to me like they're going to stay from everything I've seen.
I think they stay. I mean, the short answer is the politicians don't want to deal with the headache, and I really think it's that simple. It's a lot of work that they would have to deal with. They would be called on the carpet to negotiate many new things, which would be very difficult, take a lot of time, and frankly, they don't want to. It's much easier to stay the course and go, guess what? Yes, some of it's not fun, but let's do it anyway. And they've gone as far as, I don't know if you've seen it, but the ballot that they put out, the referendum that they mailed to everybody in the post, it showed you an example of how to fill out the ballot by checking a box. In their example, they showed you checking the box to remain in the European Union.
Oh,
and so
okay.
They're doing everything they can to make sure that this goes their way.
A little more than subliminal, I guess.
I know, right?
All right. Well, let's shift over and talk about oil then, because everybody pays attention to that. I saw an article this morning that's from CNBC that says there's a new normal forming in oil between $35 and $50 a barrel. Do you buy into that, or are we headed back to $65, $75, $80 oil?
I don't know that I buy much of what CNBC says. I trust somebody in the oil field a lot faster, and I trust Talking Head in New York on that. But I will tell you there's two things on oil I think of, and one of them is growing demand, which it is growing, albeit very slowly, and the other one is for supply to come back. First of all, we've got about 3% of world supply offline. We've got a problem in Libya. We've got a problem in Nigeria, a couple of other problem areas that has basically taken this amount of supply off the market, which is very unusual for that amount to be off the market. I mean, we're talking like the start of the Iraqi war and things like that. And so with that supply off the market, we've moved up to around 50. When it comes back, because it will come back, because people in those areas need the money, I think you see oil come back in. The caveat in here is, what happens in the oil patch in the U.S.? Everybody says, well, when oil prices come back, then frackers go back and start, you know, pulling out of the ground faster again. We all know it really doesn't happen that fast. You got to get equipment you can drive back on site. It's tough to get the workers back. They got fired. They got let go. They got whatever. They've moved on because they have to provide for their family, and they don't want to be burned again. And so it'll take a while, which means I think that you'll see oil drift a little bit higher here. But I think you've got another run down into certainly the high 30s, if not the low 30s, before we're done with all this, because you will get that supply back from overseas, and you will get some producers back in the energy sector in the U.S.
All right, so you're looking for a dip probably, probably this summer, I guess, is when it's going to happen.
Yeah, this summer, probably even in the fall, I think you'll get it when we switch back over and there's a lot of supply after the drive season.
Yeah, that's right, after the driving season. What about politics? This is an interesting year. Interesting people running for government. Does that historically have any impact on the markets long term?
You know what? Long term, actually, it does long term. I'll tell you, short term, it doesn't. And that's something Harry and I have always said is, you know, politics we really don't get into because it doesn't move the needle year to year in terms of how people work, how they pursue making more money or stuff. But it does have a long-term effect on regulation, whether an administration is pro-regulation or is trying to pare down or limit regulation can have a significant effect on business. And it really does make a difference. So that can. My deal this year is we should have an incredible run toward the election in November. And it should be a lot of fun to watch. The only problem is at the end of it, we have to call one of them president. So I don't know what you do with it. It's going to be crazy.
Yeah, I think you're right. And what about this stock market? I mean, it just seems to, it's kind of like the Energizer Bunny. Now, it doesn't always go up, obviously, but there seems to be a great reticence for this market to sell off. That nothing seems to, no matter what kind of news it is, it doesn't seem to have the impact it would take to really drop the stock market. What do you think is going on?
I think that we're watching America get older. I think you're seeing people with assets put more of their money into the financial markets. They got scared out of investing in real estate, and they're looking for a place to make a return. And where else are they going to put it? In bonds making 2% or 3%? I think they're there even when they're scared. And I think a lot of people are scared right now, but they don't have much of a choice.
You're right. I think it may be the only game in town, at least right now. That's where we get the term the Tina market. There is no alternative. And so, to me, that makes a lot of sense. Rodney, if you'll hang on, I want to talk a little bit more about demographics when we get back. So stay with us, folks. You're listening to Straight Talk Money, where we bring you the wisdom of Wall Street each and every day. Back in just a moment.
The following is a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.
Everybody's happy, and we keep extending the rally. I don't know how far it's going to go, and I want to ask my guest that, because we are really pleased this morning to have with us Mr. Rodney Johnson. And Rodney and Harry Dent, in my personal opinion, are the two greatest experts, the most knowledgeable experts on demographics. And so I want to take a little bit in this segment to talk to Rodney about that. And Rodney, in fact, why don't you, if I'd never heard of the word demographics, How would you describe it to me as an investor? How would you? What? Why does it make sense to me as an investor to pay attention to demographics?
Well, I would tell you, or somebody that didn't know much about what we do, that you have to watch what people do to figure out where they're headed next. And it's not that people spend money in just a crazy fashion, spending on whatever shows up at, you know, the end of the checkout aisle at those impulse buys at, you know, the grocery store with all the Star magazines and Parade and stuff. People go through very predictable stages of their spending that's typically based on age, which is typically based on where you are in your family life, because we tend to come out single, of course, get into the workforce, we go to school, we don't make a lot of money, so we're not spending a lot. We may spend everything we have, but we don't have a lot, so it doesn't really matter. As we're starting to spend a little more, we tend to get married, and then we have children, and that's when we really jump on the spending train. When we have kids, we tend to get on this very predictable path of spending that lasts about 20 years while the kids are home, which tends to be from late 20s to late 40s. And then after that, we move into empty nest, where we're not lowering our lifestyle. We're not spending a ton less, but we tend to spend less on credit, and you can't overstate that. We're spending what we make or just a little less than what we make, and so we go on vacation. We, you know, splurge on this or that, buy a nice car perhaps, but we do it out of savings, and so we're not supercharging the economy because we're using saved and earned dollars. And we're also preparing for retirement, paying down other debt that we have. And so then we get through, of course, empty nest, and we retire, where our spending does drop a little bit. If you can see people going through these big chunks of time, don't have a lot so they can't spend a lot, then really ramping up spending as they have kids at home, and then spending, yes, but doing it through saved money and earnings instead of debt, and then spending less, then you can start saying, well, how many people are at each stage, and what does it mean for the economy? And that's exactly what we do. And we watched the boomers come through their spending years, which was basically the late 80s through the late 2000s. And then, of course, the boomers went into the empty nester phase in the front end, or, of course, in retirement. And we said it was going to be a very difficult slog because the group behind them, the Gen Xers, are not as big. And so there just aren't as many of them in their peak spending years to keep this thing going as it was. That's exactly what's happened. Now, behind them, of course, is Generation Z or Millennials, whatever you want to call them, a very large group, but they're young. There's a ton of them, but they don't have much money. So, yeah, that's great. There's a big group. They're going to do something, but they're not the ones at the peak of the spending curve today. It still is Gen X, and so you can't count on them to drive things forward right now.
Right. I mean, we seem to be in the trough between the two big generations, which were the baby boomers and the millennials. And so we're in that trough. That trough doesn't look like it's going to move up measurably till the early, like 2022 or something like that. So are we possibly looking at a sideways market until that time?
Oh, we think so, and a sideways economy, right? And that's kind of that's the weirdness that we feel is that disconnect, as we talked about at the end of the last segment. The market's up, but the market's up even though interest rates are exceptionally low. We don't have inflation, don't have a lot of growth. Our GDP was, you know, less than 1%. Annualized in the first quarter, and yet the market's up. Just doesn't feel like it's all coalescing. And the big reason, as we see it, is that we don't have this big driving population of a generation to move us forward. We're in that trough, as you call it, and our research showed that it lasts about 14 years, very common for this to happen. And we said it would start somewhere between 2008 and 2010, which puts it ending in the early 2020s. And you just right. kind of go through this period.
Okay, 14 years. That's interesting. All right, we yep. have a question.
We have a question right. coming from one of our listeners here in the Houston area. Rodney, where do you see the market going looking ahead, say, 12 to 18 months? Are you seeing a drop in the market?
We are. And our view is that we've pushed this very far, and mostly by the Federal Reserve, and not just our Federal Reserve, but central banks around the world, and that we believe valuations are very high, and they're not warranted because we don't have the growth behind it to back it up. And so it appears that from, you know, Japan, as I talked about earlier, with the prime minister backing off of his sales tax hike, what's going on in the European community with the European Central Bank buying tens of billions of bonds over there and it not moving the needle on their own growth, we think that the world, the financial world's kind of tired of central bank action, and they just don't believe it's having the same effect that it did, say, in 2009 or 10. And so we think we're looking at a retrenchment coming here, probably, you know, in any time. Let's go with any time. I wouldn't be surprised to see it tomorrow. I wouldn't be surprised to see it happen in the fall or next spring, because we're sitting at very high levels without any of that growth to back it up or support it.
Now, when you say retrenchment, what does your work say? Are we talking about a correction of 10%? Are we talking about a bear market of 20? What type of pullback do you see?
All right, we're in the bear market camp. There's no question that we think we're going to a bear market. It's been a very long road higher, but not built on something we would normally want it to be built on. And so when we see the retrenchment, we see it far past 10%. How far into bear market territory? I have no idea. And how long could it last? That's the other piece of this. Typically, you get these bear markets and they bounce back. But if you didn't have the growth to begin with, it's not like you're flushing out, you know, one piece of a bubble. It's just been this slow, methodical growth higher evaluation. Maybe the valuation comes back in and we just don't get growth for a while. That's my biggest worry, is that we get a retrenchment of more than 20%, but then we don't get the snapback.
Right. Now, where's money going to go, Rodney? Because back in 2008, you could have pulled your money out of the stock market and still gone into a 10-year treasury and had a decent rate of return, like 4.5 or something. Where's money going to go? Because obviously you mentioned earlier in the last segment, there's a lot of risk of the bond market on with rising interest rates. It looks like real estate is becoming pretty fairly priced in a lot of markets. When that big money comes out, the billion-dollar chunks come out, where are they going to go?
I worry that they're going to go into real estate and bonds. I mean, I see bond rates going lower, and which is really unfortunate because there's almost no return there. And I worry that people will walk back to real estate because they have seen 6 or 7 years of appreciation now, and perhaps they kind of get lulled into a sense of false security there, that it could keep going.
Right.
But the real problem, of course, you know, as you and Peggy know, is that if you get into a period, another extended period of exceptionally low interest rates, say below 2% on a 30-year bond, it screws up many people's metrics, like insurance companies and pension funds that bank on growth of between 5.5% and 7% a year just to make their numbers. And so that's a very big concern going forward with so many people looking at retirement.
Where do you see opportunity? We've got about 30 seconds. Where are you putting your money right now?
I do like fixed income. I've liked bonds a long time, particularly tax-free bonds, because I think the one thing for sure is taxes are going higher. And I think energy is something I've got my eye on. I'm not exactly sure how to play that one, but I believe that the energy sector was pushed down way too far.
I think so, too. Yeah, I think it provides good opportunity. Rodney, thank you so much for being with us today. We really appreciate it. We hope you have a great day. And congratulations on your win this weekend.
Thank you both.
You have been listening to a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.